From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On August 1st, 1981, MTV went live with Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. You know what that means. A quarter century has gone by. It's a birthday MTV is barely celebrating. 25 is a little old to be hip, but there it is. Today, the MTV footprint is huge, but it's not alone anymore. And for today's MTV generation, the brand is as much about the shows, Real World, Pimp My Ride, Laguna Beach, as it is the music. This hour on Point, MTV at 25, what it's meant for music, pop culture, and you. You can join the conversation, do you still want your MTV? Or at 1-800-423-8255, that's 800-423-TALK. We've got a great lineup of guests today. I'm delighted to begin to invite them in. With us from New York is Craig Marks, editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine. Craig Marks, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom.
And joining us from New York is pop culture writer Chuck Klosterman. He writes for Spin Magazine, the New York Times Magazine. He's a columnist for Esquire. He's author of Killing Yourself to Live and Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. His forthcoming book is Chuck Klosterman for a Decade of Curious People and Dangerous Ideas. Chuck Klosterman, thanks for being with us.
Hello.
We'll be joined soon by Paul Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky. But let me jump right in with you guys. Here we are. 25 years old. We've been hearing all week about that number. What we're really curious about is the cultural impact of MTV across that time and the ways in which it's changed us, changed the culture. New York Magazine, a very funny lineup of things that they're attributing to MTV this week, saying it gave everyone ADD, made Madonna possible, Jessica Simpson possible, invented reality TV, made Starbucks possible with its kind of grunge moment out of Seattle, neutered hip-hop, we'll ask DJ Spooky about that, defeated communism, it beamed into East Berlin 2 days before the wall came down, killed the music video. I don't know, when you stand back, Craig Marks, and look at the cultural impact, how do you see it? How do you begin to describe it?
Well, I'd say most of those things, minus maybe the Starbucks and the downfall of communism,
maybe,
are probably true.
Yeah.
You know, it radically changed television, and it changed music just as well. You know, music in 1981, you know, radio had become this huge sort of codified mechanism, you know, and was a rather conservative venue. It was hard for artists to get heard on the radio. And one of the things that MTV did was they allowed certain kinds of musics that were considered almost outsider or certainly gauche and vulgar to have huge platforms. When MTV first started, there were very few music videos that existed. The record companies hardly made them outside of a few artists, especially ones who were based in Europe. And they needed to fill this programming maw that they invented. And so artists from a genre of music that sort of loosely is called new wave, and artists from later from a genre of music that's called hair metal, both which placed an emphasis on visuals and a kind of almost ambisexuality, this kind of weird dressing up in girls' clothes and an outlandishness and a vulgarity that was, you know, great and central to rock and roll, became all of a sudden part of the American youth culture scene, whereas if it wasn't for MTV, it wouldn't have. And that's only the very beginning of the networks and the way that it affected music.
Chuck Klosterman, you're great on how it has changed personal relationships once it gets into the reality TV era. But let's just stick with that early 80s for a moment and the impact on music, the kind of music, what we heard, how we took music on board. How do you see the MTV fingerprints on that?
Well, to me, the thing that's most interesting about this is there's always the idea that MTV, to a certain extent, replaced FM radio or sort of became what FM radio was to people in the 80s. But the difference is that, you know, a music video isn't just a visual image. It's like radio plus the visual image. Mm. So what it really does is it sort of adds this new criteria for what people might like from a band. One of the first bands that are sort of always credited with MTV sort of making into this kind of huge monster was Duran Duran. Mm-hmm. Now, it's possible that Duran Duran might have been popular just through the sonic quality of their records. But because they were really good looking and because they were interesting looking, they fit perfectly sort of into this new paradigm that MTV had created. And because of that, it became sort of this self-perpetuating idea. If the idea was that MTV can make a band like Duran Duran succeed, and one of the reasons they succeed is because they're good looking, or people are finding a new reason to sort of appreciate a band. Well, then that idea must be copied, and you know I think the thing that MTV mainly did is it removed some of the previous qualities from the 60s and 70s that people used when gauging what they wanted to hear, and sort of kind of making these new categories that certain bands fit into, and like the genres that Craig just mentioned are two prime examples of that, where it was suddenly important, or much more important, how a band appeared or sort of the posture the band took, regardless of what their song sounded like.
Mm. Talking about the way people look becoming such a big issue, weirdly, for almost 2 years after it started, no black artists on MTV. And then March 31st, 1983... Michael Jackson, and there, of course, I mean, talk about taking down the wall between sound and appearance. Craig Marks is with us, Chuck Klosterman, and right now from New York, Paul Miller, a.k.a. DJ Spooky, joins us. DJ Spooky, thanks very much for being here.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Craig. Hey, everybody. How you doing?
It's great to have you here. Here's this weirdness. Almost 2 years without a black artist on MTV at the outset. First, what do you simply make of that?
Well, I mean, you have to remember, America's always had a lot of strange double standards when it comes to whether it be TV, radio, etc. I mean, if you go back to the early days of radio, when you had quote-unquote race records, and you had Al Jolson and the Jazz Singer, you know, in blackface, etc., etc., there's so many layers of how that kind of stuff unfolds. I have to admit, at the moment, I'm really intrigued with places like how bands like artists, you know, the Arctic Monkeys or Gnarls Barkley are coming out of the whole download culture. So TV is kind of old news on a certain level, which is why it's even more interesting to look at this as a nostalgia issue, you know?
TV, old news, and we'll look at that. Lots of competition for MTV these days, but the style that it brought on board. I mean, this New York Magazine list again talking about the MTV giving everyone ADD, quick cuts, whipsaw, camera action, kind of the de facto visual language of American culture now. But also, here we have Thriller, 14 minutes. I mean, it's a huge production and kind of nurturing an art form, a kind of, you know, whether it's a Michael Gondry, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or Jonathan Glazer, Sexy Beast, Craig Marks, a visual language that went out of music video and right into the whole world of video imagery.
Well, sure. And you know, I think that comes down to the fact that MTV was the first youth channel. You know, that's in the days when cable was first being invented, you know, you maybe had a movie channel, and the same people who started MTV had a kids network. But this was the first youth network. And despite the cutting edge values that MTV professes, what it also had were some very old school boomer values about what rock and roll meant. And I think if you look at all their programming up until current days, I think what you can always see shot through what they put on the air is what they seem to believe still are the values that rock and roll brings, which is, freedoms, sexual and cultural, an emphasis on desire, whether it's also sexual or commodities, an idea that you can reinvent yourself, that your identity is never fixed, an idea of consumption being an important part of culture, and also just the idea that youth is to be celebrated. And so the video, it made sense that while this new medium came to be, the world at large took great notice on it, and Hollywood took great notice at it, because it was, you had a built-in audience of teenagers and younger teenagers and that, and older teenagers and that, and the values that they were celebrating and showing off were values that were both cool and lucrative. And if it wasn't for the fact that they were lucrative, then Hollywood wouldn't have come a-calling.
And now, sprawling all over the place, MTV Networks Co., $7 billion a year, 169 countries, 28 languages. If you're watching SpongeBob SquarePants or South Park or Jon Stewart, I mean, they've got Nickelodeon and VH1 and Comedy Central and a lot more. DJ Spooky, the values embedded in all that empire, do you see them as edgy or mainstream or something in between?
Well, I mean, to me, a lot of the style of editing and the way that they actually put together videos comes out of the art world, actually. If you look at Nam June Paik, he is an artist who's one of my favorite artists. He had a great piece called Global Groove in, like, I can't remember, like the late 60s, early 70s. He's one of the first artists to use satellites, you know, to project images, et cetera. But I look at the way that MTV kind of affected attention span and stuff like that is, again, migrating more into the internet. I mean, you can look at Google, which dwarfs, I mean, in terms of economics, it's in the same kind of range in a much shorter amount of time. But the problem with looking at TV right now is I think you have to account for things like what they call time shifting and place shifting, where it's like people are beginning to actually download their own TV shows and remix them and do all sorts of stuff. The actual top-down model of this is your culture, you go buy it and, you know, watch it on TV, et cetera, I'm really intrigued with how that's fragmenting. In fact, the kind of fragmentation that all the TV channels are slowly losing audiences to, you know.
And how MTV is going to do in that era, we'll look at that. Rupert Murdoch outbid them from MySpace.com, spent $580 million. MTV didn't get it. They wanted it. DJ Spooky, Chuck Klosterman, Craig Marks, please stand by. We're looking at MTV at 25. We go out with Dire Straits, Money for Nothing, the I Want My TV refrain, sung by Sting. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about MTV at 25 and its impact on American and global pop culture, from Michael Jackson to Madonna, here with Justify My Love to Pimp My Ride. MTV first refused to air Madonna's video here, reversed that decision, and has reversed a lot of things about the way American culture works and looks and gets communicated. We're joined in this hour from New York by DJ Spooky, Paul Miller. His latest album is DJ Spooky in Fine Style, 50,000 volts of Trojan Records. Craig Marks, editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine, is with us, and pop culture writer and columnist for Esquire Magazine, Chuck Klosterman. You can join us as well. Did you watch it then? Do you watch it now? Was MTV the soundtrack of your adolescence? Were you happily lost in the videos? And have you stuck with MTV in the age of Laguna Beach, Pimp My Ride, Real World, Key West? What was your maximum moment on MTV? Duran Duran, Beavis and Butthead, Cobain Unplugged, The Osbournes. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Jeff is calling from Nashville. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hey, good. Hello, everybody. My question really has to be about MTV in general as a corporation, as a part of the Viacom empire.
Yep.
And the point being that they're into country music, into kids' television. You can watch Andy Griffith reruns now on TV Land. With all of that, is this good for music? Is it good for television to have such a monopoly? And I'd love to give the panel's input on that.
Let me put it straight to them. Chuck Klosterman, first to you.
Well, I mean, in a broad sense, it seems the obvious answer would be, of course, it's not good for music to have this sort of corporate entity make these decisions. Although, in truth, I think that's always sort of a counterintuitive way of looking at it. I mean, you know, you can be a musician completely separate from MTV's sort of a control over what is heard and what isn't heard.
So, and as DJ Spooky says, things are leaking out in all directions now with new technology.
Well, I mean, of course. I mean, it's sort of like they're – I mean, one thing that MTV sort of did and is always credited for is sort of like accelerating culture and widening culture and sort of, or splintering it, I might be a better way of describing it. And while it makes it harder for like an artist to sort of maybe have huge commercial success without their assistance, mm-hmm. it also provides, I think, other opportunities for them to have a career that is completely detached from the world they've created, even though that world is the dominant one.
Well, can I jump in here?
Yes,
for a
please.
All right. I mean, the fun part about looking at TV right now is that it's actually a good mirror of cultural production values. I mean, if you look back in time, the phonograph, for example, or the mechanical piano, there were actually riots when they came out. Everyone thought the mechanical pianos would put everybody out of work. Even, you know, Betamax or VHS were really controversial when they first came out. Mm. But TV, I mean, the good part about MTV is that it's helped people get a lot of styles out. I remember my first MTV experience was mainly with Fab Five Freddy and Yo MTV Raps, actually. I mean, I guess of the three of us, that was when I was a, you know, early teenager, in the ancient late 80s, early 90s. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, I really think that the whole way that spaces like MySpace or a couple other sort of indie media, for example, they're really transforming the way people relate to the content. And so you look from content and context, which I think it's MTV was good for certain things, and now it's that kind of evolution is really accelerating out into the internet.
Craig Marks, how have you looked at it over the years as kind of a friend of acceleration, widening, splintering, as Chuck says, or as our caller Jim from Nashville suggests, you know, a big monopolist sitting on creativity?
Well, you know, you have to remember that MTV has developed as cable TV has developed too, and so when it first made its impact, there were no other networks like it, and there practically still aren't. But there were hardly any other cable networks to be at all, and it had, you know, it was new and exciting, and its cultural footprints, as you said earlier, were enormous, especially for the artists that it promoted. You know, but MTV started as a radio station, basically. It played videos. Videos are 3-minute songs, and you can't keep viewers tuned in to 3-minute songs. They'll turn the channel when they hear or see a song they don't like, mm-hmm. and they don't know when their favorite songs are going to come on the air, and that's the basis of television, to be able to tune into a show at 8 p.m. on Thursdays or so when you know it's going to be on. And so they realized they had to change their economic model, and that's when they began to program, you know, starting with The Real World and other shows like that, and take off, essentially, and remove, for the most part, music videos as their lifeblood, which is why, you know, still I think the brand values that they extol are, they would say, are still prevalent in the shows that they air. And so, you know, their impact is lessened only, I think, by the fact that there's now 500 channels or so, and by the rise of the internet, which has, you know, I think, flattened everything a bit. But a show that, for example, like Total Request Live, or TRL, which I think debuted at least in the late 90s and continues to this day, had an enormous impact both on the music world by promoting and minting such teen pop stars as NSYNC and Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. And that might have been, frankly, the last big heyday of record sales that we'll ever experience. I mean,
with
MTV
also, driving the train there.
And then also by having the viewers call in and mandate what gets played, you know, to a certain extent. And that was very interactive. And that kind of interactivity was pretty ahead of its time.
Let me go to Lake Watery, South Carolina, and Tony, if I may. Hi, Tony. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Good. What do you know, Tony?
Hey, I used to love my MTV.
And now?
Now I love my VH1 classics.
So you're stuck in the 80s. What's up, Tony?
I guess so. I'm just an old tail-end boomer, you know, and I used to love it when MTV actually did music videos, you know, but now it's all reality TV, or should I call it unreality TV.
Pimp My Ride is not grabbing you?
Not really. You know, it's just not something I hook onto anymore. You used to do great stuff. When MTV came out in the 80s, I loved the artists. You know, I think the last really good videos I saw on MTV were maybe in the late 80s with U2, maybe like the Grateful Dead. You know, some of the bands I guess I grew up with and always loved. Maybe I'm just out of the demographic now, you know, but I really think they've kind of devolved away from being a presenter of music videos and have turned into something else. It seems to be very shallow, very over-sexualized. I just don't know. When has MTV done a video by Radiohead, The Flaming Lips, Widespread Panic, Moe, a lot of the bands that a lot of young people actually like today, but they're not being presented on MTV.
Yeah, Tony wants his MTV back. DJ Spooky, what do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I definitely think that nostalgia is a big market, which is why VH1 seems to be doing pretty well. I definitely think that also MTV is probably going to have even more of an evolution towards reality TV stuff, which is cheap to produce, accessible for a wide demographic base, and kind of just touches some buttons in people's emotional landscape that just right now music videos are actually kind of, I mean, product placement to me at least. The whole thing is much more kind of directed towards the internet where you can have a very specialized kind of database situation going on. I mean, it's... When I say database, I'm talking about the way that you can have profiles of what your taste is. You can have specialized relationships with artist websites for downloadable, you know, media, and so on. So if it's not on TV, I mean, I would just suggest download it. But that's, you know, at this point, I see kids walking around with their video iPods, and that's their new channel. It's not necessarily like it's. I like to call it the TiVo mentality, where you just edit and pick and choose what you want.
But there was a time when MTV really was driving artists and whole sounds into the center of the culture. Let's listen back for a minute here to NWA, one of the first gangsta rap groups to get huge commercial success without major mainstream radio airplay. MTV refused to air NWA videos. Then, well, here's the title track of the groundbreaking album Straight Outta Compton that went double platinum. Paul Miller, DJ Spooky, remind us of the relationship between MTV and rap, hip-hop, how it brought it into the American mainstream.
Well, to me, the whole Fab Five Freddy phenomenon was great because Fab Five Freddy had come straight out of the underground of New York sort of art world and graffiti and sort of the whole scene going on. I mean, there's a very famous phrase in Blondie, you know, where she says Fab Five Freddy, you know, very classic old song for the disco scene. But, Fab Five, you know, really just had a good pulse on all that. I mean, the whole MTV Raps situation. The funny thing is, whenever I hear that N.W.A. song, the drum beat is sampled from an old record called "Amen, Brother" by the Winstons. It's a very famous sample, but that eventually evolved into what they call jungle or drum and bass. It's always one of those layers and layers and layers. To make a long story short, I'd say that hip-hop was already a kind of a visual medium because they were passing around video mixtapes. There was a lot of stuff going on in the underground. MTV championing N.W.A., I think, broke so many layers of what was going on. There was a kind of a double standard going on with video in general. And one can see a lot of that still going on today, but at this point, hip-hop is now America's soundtrack, so there's no real... It's more the underground-overground kind of distinction.
But do you credit MTV for sort of driving the soundtrack of Compton into Omaha and Cedar Rapids?
I would say Elvis was probably more responsible for that.
Taking it way back. Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, black culture in America has always been kind of an eerie, problematic situation for mainstream versus underground. I mean, whether you're Little Richard or whether it's the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or updating the same formula, you have Eminem or the Beastie Boys, et cetera. I mean... it's just how it becomes visual, you know?
Let me turn to Atlanta, Georgia, and Justin. Hi, Justin, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hey, how you doing?
We're great.
I'm a little worried about where MTV's going, actually.
Why?
Well, if you look at the type of perception of American culture, it's like, hey, I'm 16, I'm a girl, I deserve a $200,000 birthday.
The Sweet 16 show that shows these blowout parties and coming up parties.
Yeah, it's just horrible, and you know the idea that just hooking up and, you know, just relationships, you know, there's no morals to MTV anymore, I don't think.
Were there ever, Justin?
I think it was a little bit better. I'm 23, and as I've grown up, it's progressively gotten worse.
In your time.
Yes.
Justin, concern noted. Let me turn it to Chuck Klosterman. Chuck, what about we spoke about the vulgarity. It's been celebrated, you know, from Beavis and Butthead and right at the beginning. And, of course, they produced the famous, infamous Janet Jackson NFL halftime show. The NFL says they'll never hire them again. Justin says, I don't like where, 23 years old, and doesn't like where this is taking the country's moral sense of itself.
Well, first of all, I'm sure he's not the only person who feels that way. I bet there's a lot. I bet that's a pretty common, certainly among people generally older than him. They probably, when they watch MTV, they feel very alienated from it. The content probably seems very, you know, we I think people in the music industry don't look at MTV as very edgy, but if you're, you know, if you're a housewife and banger maid, maybe it does. You know, I mean, in a sense, MTV has been too successful in the its kind of unconscious goal. It started playing videos, and it sort of changed the way people perceived culture. You know, there'd be 14 videos in an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, the attention pan, it changed attention spans. Everyone's aware of this. But it got to a point where people actually looked at these videos as these autonomous shows, you know. So they had to find, like, as Craig mentioned, this new model. So they had to, so even though no one at MTV or even most of its audience would prefer to see the music, they realized that showing 30-minute, you know, episodes of, like, Singled Out or the Jessica Simpson Show or whatever was more effective. Now, in order to keep keep people interested, they're appealing to an audience that's very young. So a lot of these issues that this caller had just called up, I mean, that sort of is the core of what the show's aesthetic needs to be, basically, which is kind of this constructed edginess.
And of course, with that, the vulgarity to keep it compelling in a certain way for a young audience. I mean, it's amazing to go back and think how 1992 MTV aired the first reality TV show, The Real World, as you say, Chuck. It's now in its 17th season. The Real World Key West still follows the founding premise of the series, where the audience gets to, quote, find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real. Here's an example of a typical real world household conflict.
I'm excited to see the race. Where is it running around? Is it like on the...
It's on the beach.
On the beach? Oh, it's so cool.
You can print out a map so you guys can find where you guys want to sit and cheer, whether or not you want to sit at the...
What time are we leaving?
Probably around noonish.
Noonish?
Where are you going on Saturday?
So, John, I don't want to be offensive to you, Svetlana, or...
But you don't want me coming to the marathon. I was going to go anyways, dude. It's cool.
No. It's because they expressed...
No, don't worry. I don't want...
Well, I just want to know... I was just going to go with Jose because he's the one that wanted to go. And then Paula and Zach said they wanted to go.
Tyler,
so I was like...
It's cool. I don't want to go. I didn't want to go anyways, man.
I don't want to be, like, rude. It's just whoever's coming in with Zach, myself, Paula, and Jose going to West Palm Beach for the marathon. They could share in this experience. And they wouldn't try and steal the attention for one reason or another.
I just think, once again, this is him thinking about himself, dude. This is the first I've even heard of it.
Okay. Chuck Klosterman, help us here. We don't have the visuals, but there is so much of the sound of MTV in the last 15, 17 years. I read you practically obsessed with The Real World. What's the magic, if that's the right word, or what's going on with The Real World's hold on its audience over all those years?
Well, of course, when you take like a blip of that out of context, it's kind of funny because, of course, it sounds idiotic. It sounds like a bunch of young people arguing about things that don't exist almost.
Yes, yes.
When the first time The Real World premiered, I mean, I remember watching the premiere season, and that was sort of the thing. It's like, well, there's this show about young people arguing, and it did seem very novel and very different. It's interesting over time now that reality television has become sort of the dominant idiom of television. But most of the shows, like The Apprentice or The Survivor, you know, they're almost like these kind of game shows where there is some sort of some prize to win at the end, or it's very competitive. Whereas The Real World is still this show where really the whole premise is just getting on it. Because if you get cast on that show, you sort of become this like snapshot of what kind of like the greatest extension of youth culture at that time is.
And you said written that it drives people to, even when they're not on the show, to go for this singular persona, that everyone has to have a persona as though they're a real world character, even when they're not anywhere near being on the show.
Oh, that's absolutely true. Because I think the idea initially was that people would see glimpses of people they know in real life on this program. They'll get someone who, you know, an individual who's gay or very verbally combative or confused about their sexuality, whatever. And people would see glimpses of real people that they knew, and that's why it would resonate with them. But over time, because they kept, you know, the show got really popular, I start to see elements of real life almost reflecting the show. It seemed to validate the idea that you could be an interesting person by being one-dimensional, and it doesn't build well-rounded personalities, but like very obvious ones.
And the more one-dimensional you got, the bigger your chance that you might be yourself on MTV. Chuck Klosterman, Craig Marks, DJ Spooky, please stand by. We're looking at MTV at 25 listeners. You can join us. Has MTV changed the way we see the world, see each other? What do you want, expect next from MTV? Do you still want your MTV? Kurt Cobain here from Nirvana's Unplugged performance, Come As You Are. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. It's
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about MTV at 25 and its impact on American and global pop culture. Over the years, it's moved a lot away from music video into all kinds of shows. My Super Sweet 16, Laguna Beach, Tierra Girls, Cheyenne, Pimp My Ride, Cribs. Moving away from the music to programming. Here's a sampling of what's on.
What's up, MTV? My name is Joey Fatone, and I'm here to show you my house.
God. Here we go again. This looks like it needs to be parked out in front of like a bingo palace in like Santa Fe or some shit like that.
My name is Cheyenne Kimball, and I've been singing and writing music since I was 8 years old. Now I'm 15 and have my own record coming out. And even though things are quiet now, I can tell it's about to get pretty hectic. I'm a total pageant girl. I have competed 8 times, and I've won 5 crowns.
I'm having the biggest Sweet 16 party Scottsdale's ever seen.
This house is insane. You don't understand.
Get ready. Laguna Beach has a whole new class of kids.
The new sound of MTV. We're joined in this hour by pop culture writer Chuck Klosterman, by DJ Spooky, author of Rhythm Science. He collaborated with Public Enemy's Chuck D on the 2004 album Drums of Death. Craig Marks is here. He's editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine. You can join us. Do you still want your MTV? We're at 800-423-TALK. Julian's calling from Round Rock, Texas. Hi, Julian. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say, you know, I hear a lot of people talking about the morals of MTV. And, I mean, yeah, they're not that great, but, I mean, it's an escape from reality. I mean, it's not like we do that in real life. I'm talking about teens myself. I'm 18. And it just, you hear music 24/7, especially our age with the internet
sure.
and MP3 players. But you come home, you know, you want to see something that, you know, you don't see every day, like a million-dollar house or a car that's been pimped out for a kid who's really deserving.
So Cribs or Pimp My Ride running in the background at your house, in your life, Julian?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I love to see. I mean, there was one episode of Pimp My Ride where this kid, he had three brothers and sisters, and he was just raising them with his mom, who was disabled. And it's just awesome to, like, see them help him out. And they gave him an awesome car with, like, TVs in the back for his little brothers and sisters. I mean, it's just good to see, you know?
Yeah, fun to watch, and you want to have it on. Julian, thanks for your call. Craig Marks, I mean, adult America knows Extreme Makeover. I've seen grown men cry when homes are made over for needy families. Here, MTV's got a version, Pimp My Ride. The good people at West Coast Customs take a real dog of a car and in 30 minutes turn it into a pimped out luxury situation, as Julian says. So what's going on there, Craig? The appeal is just to have a happy moment watching?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's in a large part what it is. I mean, you know, you have, you know, MTV parallels trends in television too. And so, you know, MTV, Pimp My Ride is Extreme Makeovers for teenagers. And The Hills and Laguna Beach or Dynasty or Dallas or Desperate Housewives for teenagers. You know, these shows are geared for 12 to 24-year-olds. You know, that has to be kept in mind. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the MTV's morals, you know, so to speak, and anyone who looks for morals you know, in MTV or rock music is not necessarily looking for them in the right place. But they're complicated, you know, they're sophisticated in a lot of ways. MTV also does a lot of programming that doesn't get as, you know, isn't as fun to say as Pimp My Ride. But, you know, they do political coverage and they send their reporters to Iraq and they and I think they take those shows pretty seriously, even if they don't get a lot of attention. You know, I think they feel
do they still
bound.
We know they made a big effort when back in the 90s, I remember in the Clinton campaign, of course, Bill Clinton at an MTV party when he was asked if he wore boxers or briefs, usually he said. But is MTV still on that political line?
Well, I think they will be when the presidential elections roll around. And I think, you know, it's not their responsibility necessarily to do so. I don't see, you know, ESPN or Bravo, you know, showing documentaries about soldiers in Iraq, and they don't have any more responsibility than that. But I think they think of themselves as being representative of the interests and ideals and tastes of teenagers. And I think all those things are encompassed in MTV and even, you know, peculiarly in a show like Pimp My Ride, where the stories are aspirational, even if they, you know, glorify something that maybe adults don't think is that important.
Yeah, and Julian is touched to see it, and we hear it. Let me turn to Roberta calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Roberta, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I wanted to ask your guests about the whole idea of the sort of semi-reality, this extremely sort of commercialized, you know, this consumerist reality that's being sold in these shows. When I was, I'm part of the MTV generation,
mm-hmm.
I loved the whole fantasy of the music videos, but I knew enough not to buy into the, it was fantasy. But these days, you know, they're selling this, you know, these reality shows that are so far from reality for people of that age. How is that, what kind of repercussions is it going to have on kids today? And I have a 3-year-old now, so I'm wondering what kind of, you know, world is my daughter gonna be going into.
Roberta, let us look back and ahead with that, if I may. DJ Spooky, I want to turn first to you on that. For example, if we go back to the 80s when they did bring rap onto MTV, and pretty soon you've gone from this sort of potent protest movement, hip-hop, Public Enemy, N.W.A., to, you know, P. Diddy and TV-friendly gangsta cliches, it's been described. What about that example?
Well, I mean, it's without question that MTV is definitely one of the most important cultural kind of evolutions in the last 25 to 30 years. I mean, I'm 35 years old. It's been around most of my life, which is kind of eerie to hear a 23-year-old basically saying that it has no morals. If you look back, every musical movement, jazz was considered horrible, or rock and roll was considered devil's music or something. America is at an eerie crossroads with how we look at values. I mean, it's very difficult to get a barometer reading of it, because at the moment it just seems like anything goes. Reality TV literally has nothing to do with how we would normally view morals. I mean, whether it's Paris Hilton or like you were talking about Extreme Makeover, it's the way that when I hear these questions, I'm just thinking. When will people be able to edit and make their own version of things? Because that's probably, I'd say MTV is a good stepping stone for that direction, and it'll probably just, over the next 4 years, we'll all look back and can't believe we all watched the same TV show at the same time.
Mm. Chuck Klosterman, DJ Spooky, is really focused on what the Internet's going to make possible, YouTube and all the rest, people going for just what they want. Of course, one thing MTV is famous for is whether they're, I don't know, creating the values or identifying them very quickly and closely. So they also have kind of pushed a frontier out there. They did it on The Real World with Pedro, the AIDS activist, years back, sort of made homosexuality acceptable TV fare. That was a new frontier.
Yeah, it's strange now. With one of the things that Caller mentioned, which was this interesting point, was this. She kind of was saying it was quasi-reality, which is probably a good way to describe a lot of MTV's reality programming now. It sort of seems like, in a way, almost the worst of both worlds, because it's not really – it's not like a documentary. The people are being coached. The narrative arcs are being directed. But it's being performed by essentially real people. They're not actors. They're not professionals. So you're seeing these sort of like – like, the, you know, the real people being forced into these unreal situations. And it really is maybe just to forward the idea of, as she would argue, like consumerism or product placement. I think one thing that's interesting, though, is I do feel young people in a strange way are far, far more sophisticated about differentiating between these things now. Mm. And that while they're still impacted by culture, I think they have a better understanding at a much earlier age that what they're seeing on television is an attempt to convince them to live a lifestyle as opposed to some mirror to how their life is or is supposed to be.
Mm. The video of Ashley Simpson grew out of that. Total Request Live, we heard about earlier, that was big for a while. Ashley Simpson's show aired for two seasons, 2004-2005. Let's just put a piece of that in our ear.
On a Monday, I am waiting. Tuesday, I am fading. And by Wednesday, I can't sleep.
We get Jessica Simpson. We get Ashley Simpson. We get MTV. Ed's calling from Boston. Hi, Ed. What do you think?
Hi, Tal. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I work with teenagers for a living, and I started watching MTV as a very young person. I'm 33 now, and it's such a, like one of the panelists previously mentioned, their shows are for 14 to 24 year olds. It's such an impressionable young age group, and sometimes I wonder, is MTV responding to the current trend of pop culture, or are they instilling some type of enhanced materialistic attitude in a young population?
Yeah, you put your finger right on that chicken and egg question, and we'll come to it again. Let me bring another caller in first from Lansing, Michigan. Sarah's calling. Sarah, what do you think?
I wanted to go back to the issue of values, and I just think that MTV today is teaching girls that the only way to be empowered is to wield their sexual power over boys.
And how exactly? Through the music videos, through the shows, both?
Yeah, pretty much all their programming. I think the only time you see a strong female is when she's using her sexual power.
So I mean, Ed's looking at values, and in a way, so are you. New York Magazine saying one of the accomplishments was MTV corrupted your daughter and called it empowerment with Spring Break and wasted bikini-clad girls, amateur stripper movies. Sarah, thanks for your call. Craig Marks, there's two questions again, going to the values issue, the chicken and egg piece of this, MTV reflecting or pushing a view of what life is or ought to be.
Well, MTV and Viacom are such multi-billion-dollar corporations that I have a hard time imagining that they're doing anything that's not market-tested and field research, to the extreme.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that they're just in, and maybe when they first started they were. But at this point, they're not sitting around in meetings and just saying, I think we should push because we really want to. We should push this or we should push that. I'm sure that there are creative decisions made, but I know that, it comes out of the desires of their audience, who are very, very, very famously fickle audience, who don't stick around unless they're constantly entertained, unless their buttons are being pushed in all the right ways. I would think that it's both reflecting and creating, and encouraging certain values and choices and decisions in these kids' lives. There's a whole series of dating shows now that are extremely odd that are being marketed to very young teenage girls, to 12 to 15-year-old girls that are values challenge, let's say.
Now, I don't watch those. What are they? What's odd about them?
Well, there's one called Next. They're really what they are. They're just updates of the dating game, essentially. But in versions where there's no pretending that there's anything at stake besides perhaps hooking up. There's no chance that and there's no chance that there's going to be a relationship or anything involving love. It's just about kids instantly hooking up with other kids and making sort of impulse decisions on whether the person is attractive or not based on a 4-minute conversation or the contents of their drawers at home or such. Now, it's been cited by somebody who said that in a lot of ways, the way that they look at dating, and these shows are also based, as a lot of reality shows are based on sort of humiliation. That's what people tune in for. Mm. That, that's a more realistic way to reflection of dating than sort of, the hearts going off and puppy dogs and sunsets. So perhaps they've really, tapped into the way that kids look at and fear kind of the humiliations and rigors of teenage dating.
But pushing those buttons just as fast as they can get their hands on them. Joe's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Hi, Joe, you're on the air. Hello, Joe, are you there, my friend?
Hello?
Yes, Joe, you're on. I think Joe's got one eye on the MTV there. Let me take a call from Cambridge. We've got Katia on the line. Hi, Katia, you're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that the whole MTV culture of showing these people with these so-called ideal lives really gives the wrong image for, you know, most of the kids who are watching, you know, these shows are not 24. They're closer to 15.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to want to be, you know, like these people on Real World, who are really awful people. You know, they're not nice to their friends. They're very shallow. They have no values. And, you know, I just think, you know, I've never liked MTV, even when it was music videos, because it was just, you know, portraying these shallow people and sexuality, and it just really gives the wrong image for idealism.
And you're saying no thanks, and yet millions line up. Chuck Klosterman, awful people or us?
Well, I mean, I mean, are a lot of the people portrayed on MTV similar to what she just described? Well, I would say yes. There's a lot of awful people on MTV. A lot, you know, all these people calling in saying that the channel like lacks values or gives a skewed version of reality. Well, of course they're correct. It's an interesting reason though to be watching television though. And I mean, because it's MTV and because it's a youth-oriented channel, we have this discussion. I can't imagine having this discussion about TNT. Like, what does TNT mean?
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, what does their programming reflect? So, I mean, if someone's going to watch MTV as a way to sort of understand how they should view the world, they're going to have a huge problem. Of course they're going to have, some very kind of misplaced ideas about what's right and what's wrong and what's valuable and what's not valuable. But, you know, it's programming. I mean, so if somebody had based their life around listening to Led Zeppelin and like trying to live their life like
many
Led Zeppelin in 1976, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, but no, they loved Led Zeppelin, but how many people were actually beating people with mud sharks? How many people were drinking Jack Daniels out of the bottle daily? How many people were doing cocaine constantly and trying to sleep with as many women as possible? They weren't trying
number.
To live like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And off we go. DJ Spooky, our time is so short that Judy McGrath, CEO of MTV, has declared a digital Marshall Plan. You're pointing to this future. She says they've got to have MTV on cell phones and video games and every broadband channel. Do you see New World coming? We just got a couple of seconds here.
Yeah, I really think that the whole medium is going to be put into a forced evolution, and you're going to really have to think about the media as we knew it in the 20th century as kind of dissolving and reforming in a lot of multiple situations, and that's a good thing, and it's to be celebrated.
MTV at 25, Blink, and it will be 50. DJ Spooky, Paul Miller, joining us from New York. Wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for being with us today. And Chuck Klosterman, also in New York, pop culture writer at Esquire, author of Killing Yourself to Live, Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs. Chuck, wonderful to have you. Thanks so much for coming along.
Thanks a lot.
And Craig Marks, editor-in-chief of Blender Magazine. Craig Marks, wonderful to have you as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We go out with Shakira's Hips Don't Lie up for Video of the Year. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I really knew that she could dance like this. She make a man want to speak Spanish. Como se llama?
Shakira, Shakira.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie, and I'm starting to feel you, boy. Come on, let's go real slow. Don't you see, baby, I see us perfect.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.